Ashe. We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Porto, Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Davis Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Honorable Elijah Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John G. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name. Ashe.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Let me give you a word of the philosophy of reform. The whole history of the progress of human liberty shows that all concessions yet made to her august claims have been born of earnest struggle. The conflict has been exciting, agitating, all-absorbing, and for the time being, putting all other tumults to silence. It must do this, or it does nothing. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one. And it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, it never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will continue till they are resisted with either words or blows or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. In the light of these ideas, Negroes will be hunted at the North and held and flogged at the South, so long as they submit to these devilish outrages and make no resistance, either moral or physical. Men may not get all they pay for in this world, but they must certainly pay for all they get. If we ever get free from the oppressions and wrongs heaped upon us, we must pay for their removal. We must do this by labor, by suffering, by sacrifice, and if needs be, by our lives.
We are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlines.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings all of you, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time, 8 to 10 Eastern. So happy that you're here with us. I hope all of you are doing well. You are staying away from the COVID, and you are moving along productively. So thank you so much for joining us here this evening. We appreciate you always giving support to what we're trying to do here at the Black Reality Think Tank. As you know, the Black Reality Think Tank is a part of the TimeForAnAwakening.com network, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio network. And we are so happy to be associated with that group. We also have created and developed ourselves a Black Reality Think Tank radio network. We have three wonderful programs that air at other times. We'll talk about those in, shortly at the top of the hour. But we also have a new program that we're going to be talking about as well, too. So we thank you again for joining us. We have just come in from a very long, dueling, kind of frustrating event, better known as the presidential elections. They have, I don't know about you, my brothers and sisters, but that was a devastating and pulls a lot of juice out of you. To the point that I even stopped listening to all that news that was going on because you could kind of almost predict the way things were going. But nevertheless, we are part of this this system, whether we want to be right now or not. We do have to pay attention to what's going on around us for the sake of our community and our families. And so tonight I thought maybe we would do a little post-wrap-up. We did not broadcast last week during the election time. We decided to wait. Let's see what some of the comments, the outcomes of things will be. And obviously, I always look forward to your input and maybe what's going on in your part of the world. There's a lot of folk here from different places in the United States. Everybody's not from the same. So we just kind of love to hear from you what's going on there. And but again, as I said earlier, it's been sort of frustrating for me. So I look forward sometimes to doing some other things, get away from a lot of that. As I listened to the earlier when we played the Black National Anthem, those words are just so empowering. I don't care where you go, what you do. Those words are just a major part of what we are and what we are a part of. And so I'm so appreciative that we are able to offer you the different versions. We've had several versions that we play. But again, I don't know about you, they empower me. Those words are spiritual. They're sacred. James Weldon Johnson did a powerful thing when he did that. So anyway, hopefully you are staying stress-free and that you're moving forward. We are going to talk with several of you about some of the things that are going on, as I said, in your community, in your world. We're going to kind of look at the whole national part, and then just kind of talk about what does it mean for black folk? How do we need to understand that? But as always, you know, we do a ancestral profile, take a look at someone that is relevant to what we are trying to talk about, somebody of our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on. And I ran across this brother. I had heard of him before, but I hadn't gotten into too much of it, but a very dynamic brother. His name is the Reverend William Washington Brown. William Washington Brown. And he was the first African American to start a black bank in the United States. And he did this in 1882. He founded a bank around a sort of a fraternal organization that he had found called the Grand Founding United Order of True Reformers. The brother was truly a revolutionary. He was truly a fighter. And a lot of our ancestors were, I've been trying to provide you with these profiles of folk that were serious fighters. And we didn't hear a lot about them, as we do, say, the Frederick Douglasses and the others, the Harriet Tubmans and all of that, Booker T. Washington and so forth. These are brothers and sisters that were fighting behind the scenes and trying to make things happen. And in some cases, in many places, they were very successful. So this brother, William Washington Brown, was a former enslaved African. He was from Georgia. And this is the first black bank ever in America. And he started it with, on the first day, he got $1,269 worth of deposits on the very first day of the bank. Now, that bank that Frederick Douglass had was not a black bank, so we don't want to make a mistake and say, well, Frederick Douglass, he was just operating. That was the Freedmen Bureau Bank, which was being run by whites from behind the scenes, which is why it failed. But it was designed to give the enslaved Africans a place to put their monies as they were now able to work and get some form of compensation. But nevertheless, Reverend William Washington Brown established the bank to serve the financial interests of black depositors. He wanted a bank that would serve to protect the finances of black clients, to ensure their finances could not be monitored by whites. The name of the bank came from the Grand Fountain United Order of True Reformers. It was a bank fraternal organization established by Brown in 1849. Racial tension remained high after the Civil War, so Brown established the first black-owned bank in Richmond, Virginia, which initially operated out of his home. 2 years later, the bank moved to its location several blocks away at 604 North 2nd Street in Richmond, Virginia. The bank did very well. When the U.S. Economic Depression of 1893 hit and people were panicking and rushing to the banks to withdraw their money, Brown's bank was one of the few that survived. In fact, it was the only bank in Richmond that was able to pay out the full value of its customers' account and remain in full operation. After Brown's death in 1897, the bank continued in operation. It also expanded into other areas such as newspapers, real estate, a retirement home, and a building and loan association. Its growth included operations in 24 states. Well, however, under the new president, Reverend William Lee Taylor, the bank was mismanaged, often making unsecured loans that defaulted. Then the straw that broke the camel's back was a bank embezzlement of $50,000 by the bank's cashier. By 1910, the State Corporation Commission ordered the bank closed, but it remains in history as the first black owned by African Americans in the United States. Brown was born, as I said, in captivity. He was born as Ben Brown, and he was born in Habersham County, Georgia, on October the 20th, 1849, to Joseph Brown and Mariah Brown, both of whom were also enslaved Africans. He was sold to a horse trader around the age 8, and after the sale, Brown changed his name to William Washington Brown. He escaped his owners during the Civil War, and he joined the Union Army. When he remained until he was discharged from service in 1862, and after his discharge, Brown attended school in Washington and began a teaching position in the South, during which time he met and married his wife, Mary A. Graham. He was an outspoken proponent of the temperance movement and against the KKK. Brown initially sought to join the Independent Order of Good Templars, but was denied membership because the society was traditionally white. The society did offer Brown the option of opening a sponsored chapter named the Grand United Order of True Reformers, which he accepted. Brown died in Washington, D.C., December 21st, 1987, due to cancer and was buried in Sycamore Cemetery. The Grand United Order of True Reformers started out as a temperance organization. And in 1876, Brown was invited to spearhead a new branch of the movement in Richmond, Virginia. When interest in the organization began to decrease, Brown began shifting the organization from a temperance society to an insurance organization, a movement that required Brown to move into Richmond in 1880. Over time, the organization grew in size to where it managed a bank, ran a newspaper entitled The Reformer, owned several properties, and at one point in time was the largest black fraternal society and black-owned business in the United States. During Brown's life, the organization enjoyed a lot of good success. However, it suffered crippling setbacks in 1910 due to that embezzlement case and those bad loans, unsecured loans, that were granted to the friends of the former banker. And as a result, it was finally closed down. And to all of you, my listeners, if you wanted to take a look at something or read something about this case, there's not a lot of books written about it specifically, but there was one book written in 1900 by William Patrick Burrell. It's called 25-Year History of the Grand Fountain of the United Order of True Reformers. And it may be available. You know, you can try the what I call God on Earth, Amazon. They may have something like that. But anyway, you could take a look, do some browsing, and see what kind of archive that may be available that's holding that work. So, William Washington Brown, and I wanted to hear that because there was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago about black banks and that fact that they're failing at large rates, and that some of the problems are obviously based on COVID, you know, and some of those things, and folk are not, you know, being able to do that. One of the largest black banks that still exists is in Chicago, a brother by the name of Bill Winston. And I think he's a preacher, I believe. But Bill Winston is head of what's called Covenant Bank. But he's still been able to maintain, you know, some stability. And he's trying hard to save it. But it's becoming difficult. And they're talking, the article was speaking on what needs to happen and how it needs to be supported. So with the high rates of unemployment in African-American community and so forth, it's very difficult. And then these ghetto loan places and how they operate, and so it makes it difficult for black bank. But they are important, because in many cases they're the ones that will come to your aid to give you money to buy a home, to give you a mortgage, much quicker than obviously the white banks will do, or do some of the other things that a family may need to do in terms of loans and money financing. So anyway, take a look at that and think about the issue around black banks. Okay, let's get into our topic. Let's talk about the recent election. We got several of my brothers and sisters that are on here that are big part of everything, you know, and it's so interesting that all of this, as we said earlier in the other programs, were all going on at the same time: COVID, police killings, crazy elections, crazy politics, both local and state and national, and all of this is vexing. It's vexing to the spirit, and it kind of, I'm not going to say makes people want to give up hope, but it makes you lose energy and faith in things, and you don't want to do anything. And now with everything shut down, and, you know, a lot of the things that that were anchors for our community are no longer accessible. And so all of this falls in at the same time. So I noticed one of the things that after the announcement was made that Biden was ahead in the terms of the Electoral College, and the week right before the election, we talked very extensively about the Electoral College and what it does. And very clearly, we are hearing that now more than anything else. But they're talking about him having to, he's one of his first missions is obviously to address COVID-19. And that is such a funny area, because some of us have trouble even accepting that that's that serious. But yet we're hearing numbers. We don't know how real they are. We're hearing numbers of thousands of people dying here in the state of Wisconsin. The rates are up 700-800 people a day going to the hospital. So regardless of whether you believe it or don't believe it, you got to pay attention to it, and you got to respond in some way, because you just don't know. So anyway, his duty is to address it. He's pulled together his panel of folk that are going through. He's going to address it medically. He's going to address it from the science community, they say. And so some of those things we're beginning to see happen now. And then all in light of that, you've got the clown who was in the White House previously for the last 4 years, hollering and screaming like a baby that he wants to have it things recounted. And so that's a bunch of madness as well. And I think that's probably going to go nowhere, but you never know. You got to still got to keep your eyes open, and see where it's going to go, because you never know where it's going to go. So I think that's one of the biggest things we have to, as a community, we got to keep our eyes open. We got to keep that third eye open first, and began to kind of being able to understand. And then you got places like Philadelphia, you know, right now. Philadelphia is under serious chaos, fights. And all kind of protests, boycott, looting. everything that's going on, and that city is in an uproar, even though Pennsylvania did go Biden, but still you got chaos in the streets, in the community, among our people. It's it's an issue there. So how do we address that? So listen, let me start off with ask Brother Timothy. He's online. He is he's from the city of Philadelphia. He's also part of the Nation of Islam. Brother Timothy, what's going on in Philadelphia? Tell us, and I mean, what's going on as it relates to black folk?
Well, Dr. Rogers, we last left off talking about politics and voting. And in Philadelphia, to clinch the vote, to make sure that Biden would be the president of the people, he had to win an electoral college and a popular vote. Mm-hmm. And if you look back approximately 4 years ago, Donald Trump won the electoral vote, but he didn't win the popular vote. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't the president of the people. So it was, you got to look at South Carolina, because Clyburn in South Carolina resurrected Biden, because Biden could have been not picked out of those presidential folks who were running for the highest offices of the land. Mm-hmm. So he resurrected him, and he in turn picked Kamala Harris to be his partner. She vice, he president. And as a result of that, we saw that in the running, that we learned three things, Dr. Rogers. We learned that you could vote by mail, voting across the country, and you had the voting that was on the day of.
Let me ask you before you go on. Can you explain, what do you mean when you say that he resurrected South Carolina? Because, you know, South Carolina is red. So when you said he resurrected, what do you mean?
Well, there's a black community in South Carolina, and okay. Clyburn, and the congressman has been in there around a while. And Biden needed help. And he needed help because he wanted to be the pick of the Democratic Party. So he put all he could behind him for him to be the one to be picked. And Biden was picked. And one thing Biden did say when he became the president-elect, that black people helped him. In turn, he said that he will help black people. Mm-hmm. I will never forget that statement. So you have to realize the population of Philadelphia, we're still 65% to 70% black here. Mm-hmm. Even though we're gentrified, there are more black people here in the city than there are white people and people of color. So when it comes down to all the 50 states cast votes, remember, like I said, you have the early voting. That's wonderful. I think we need to keep the voting by mail because of the pandemic, which is smart, and the voting on the day of.
Right.
So when everything's tallied up, you know, we have 20 electoral votes. You talked about the different states with electoral votes.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. And Biden, the Democrats, only need a certain amount of votes to take him over the hill. Well, what took him over the hill was the blacks in Pittsburgh, the blacks in certain areas
right, exactly.
of Harrisburg, in Pennsylvania, and the city of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is that he had the machines taken down the Republicans for counting the mail. So they took and moved the information apparatus to the convention center, which only makes sense. If mail is in the post office, you can't have it stand there. You had to take it out to count it. So what they did, took it to the convention center, and they said, we still have mail left.
Right.
I have my radio on all night. I was listening to WLADB. It woke me up. I heard Donald Trump declare himself president at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I can't
stand. May Allah be my witness. I actually heard him. And I said to myself, what? I said, they haven't even finished the voting process.
Mm-hmm.
Then he, later on, he slows down, so does everybody else. They said, we still have votes to count. See, he thought he had won. He saw Florida. He saw those folks in Dade County who are brainwashed by him and think they're accepted.
Right.
Those Cubans. He saw that lit up red. He said, oh, I'm going to take all the rest of this. You could tell he's inexperienced and a moron. You got 49 other states.
Mm-hmm.
So listen, so as a result of that, as the votes are coming in, he was leading in Pennsylvania. And they said, whoa, we got almost a 500,000 votes to count. And after that, Biden started eating away at what his lead was. So at that point, I got a call And everybody says, we're going to meet at 11th Arch from the convention center. And some Republicans had put a little foothold there. By the time we got there and brought our people, we were on one side and they on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a chance, count every vote. And you had the Republicans over there who were saying they were being cheated. Now, that Donald Trump put that out there. They were counting the votes, Dr. Rogers, with the city commissioners there. One commissioner was Republican,
right,
and one person was Democrat. And, you know, you just don't let anybody in a place like that while you're counting votes. You don't belong in there. It's not a part of the process.
Was that unrest going on this past Tuesday? Was the unrest?
Yes, it started that Tuesday. The next morning, Wednesday, it blew up because at that point it had slowed down because the other votes count around the country. This wasn't Philadelphia. It was around the country.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So at that point, the Republicans, but they had clinched it. So as a result of that, the Democrats are on one side, and the Republicans are on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you something, Dr. Roger. That afternoon that I left was interesting, and I came back.
Okay.
As soon as I left, there was a guy who came up there with an SUV with guns. It's interesting. Maybe you said it's the battle of the bullet. It was a ballot, then you never know if it's the bullet. But
right.
He was apprehended by law enforcement. Okay? By this time, it's all around the country. Georgia is turning blue. You know,
mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, see, sometimes when you put your cash and put your vote in, it does count. I hear a lot of people see, I saw the will of the people out in the street.
Just from your personal assessment, just based on your own personal thing, what do you think was behind? Just in your assessment, what do you think was behind the change from red to blue among many of the places in the country? I think the South expected. We know the South was going to stay red, but what do you think the other areas were? What did that?
Well, I'll tell you something. With Donald Trump's wild shenanigans, one thing I don't like about Donald Trump that I give him credit for is that he took the ship of charge and said, look, we're in this room talking about what we want. I'm going to tell you people what we're about. Donald Trump did never hide how he thought, how he felt, and what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they followed behind him. I think people got tired of people of color. And white folks, too, got tired of his racism. My opinion. I could be wrong. Let me tell you something, Dr. Rogers. I saw something. You and I talk all the time. I said, Dr. Rogers, I can't believe this is going on. I knew it was bad. I never knew it was bad. Let me tell you something, Dr. Rogers. 75 million people voted for Democrats, but 70 million people voted for the Republicans. You mean to tell me they got 70 million people that actually voted for him? That racism and that wild shenanigans is not going anywhere. Unbelievable. Dr. Rogers. Unbelievable.
What do you think is going to, how is this going to fare out for black folks that I want to move to somebody else, ask them, how do you think this is going to shape out in terms of the African-American community? In other words, his victory, how would that, is that going to have an impact?
This is how we feel about people like myself who know that there's problems in the electorate, but we still vote to make sure that our votes count, that he has a vice president, Kamala Harris. Now, some people say, you know, maybe she's compromised. She's married to a white man. Maybe she's not. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is, I think with his mind, I think he's fair, even though he's made some mistakes. And her mind, even though she's made some mistakes. One thing that he did say in his speech, he said, the black people brought me out of a situation. They helped me.
Mm-hmm.
I owe them. Let's take them to task for that and see what happens. This goes to tell you, if you get the right candidates in office, you can get what you want out of this system. That's perfect. The people aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point in time, they said something, and let's hold them accountable and bring the black. I would say, where's the black agenda, and how much money did you get the candidate?
He said he owes us.
Now, remember that.
That's the catch. Where's the black agenda, and who's delivering it? And that's something that I want to talk about today as well. Let me go over to Sister Yan. How you doing, Sister Yan? How you tonight?
Greetings, Doc. How are you?
Okay, good. I know how you are about voting and so forth, and we've had several discussions before. But still, we still live here in this country, and we've got to respond to things that will be best for our community. What do you see as the number one agenda item for black folk to make sure that they acquire out of this new system that's now going in place, supposedly? What is it that we must demand? As Frederick Douglass says, you know, power yields nothing without demand. So what is it that we have to demand as African people that needs to happen for our community?
Okay, so first I want to say greetings to all.
Greetings.
Peace and love. And, Doc, I'm actually not feeling so good today.
Oh,
so
okay. I'm sorry.
I'm going to answer this evening. I'm going to answer that, just a short answer. And if you would, come back to me in about 30 minutes. Hopefully I'll be feeling better.
Okay, sure will.
My short answer is because we have been in a process of being genocided out, and our men, women, and children being locked up, especially with private prison industry, juvenile corrections, those private entities that we ain't talking about. We're not putting that on the agenda the way that we need to, as far as I see.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing for us is life.
It's what?
Our life.
Oh, say it again. I'm sorry. Say it again.
So the most important thing for us,
uh-huh,
for me, is our very lives.
Lives, okay.
You're killing us. Yes,
survival.
Killing us in front of our faces, locking us up like, you know, just locking us in cages, locking us up in cages by the thousands and thousands. Economic, you know, issues, educational issues, all the issues that we talk about, they're not going to do us any good if we don't have any more black men.
Right.
But good if we don't have, if they start locking up black women for protesting. So that's the short answer. Stopping the genocide of black folk in America would be number one.
That's what you
anti-lynching
said.
Bill.
Number one. Okay. All right. I'll come back to you later on. Let me go over here to Brother Lush. Brother Lush, what are some of the top agenda items that you think needs to be addressed by our community? I don't necessarily think that the president or the vice president is going to do it. That's not what we're interested in. What do we need to do that they need to support? What do you think?
Well, that is good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And thank you for taking my call, Dr. Rogers. You know, that's a tough question.
Very true.
A tough question because I don't want to sound, cliche-ish, you know, it's accountability. Yeah, what does all that mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to be honest with ourselves. Okay, yeah, all right. So what does that mean? First and foremost, we need to clean up in front of our own houses first, figuratively speaking.
Okay.
And literally. We have to clean up our own houses first. And so, it's going to take the time, energy, and effort to reflect on where we are individually.
Right.
And then move it towards the community. If we know that we are doing things that are destroying our environmental surroundings.
Right.
Work it. Let's work. It's time to work. It's time to roll up some sleeves. It's time to get a little sweaty. Well, it's going to be getting cooler, depending on where you are. And it's time to start working. It's hard because I think
we see what
it is that we need to do, Dr. Rogers. I think it is, we know what it is that we have to do. We know that we just, sisters just can't go out and and hustle or become wretched. Some people are saying wretched, ratchet, but maybe they mean wretched. Mm-hmm. So that's hard. I might have to think about that again.
I know you do.
In the next hour and come back again.
Yeah, let's come back again. We'll come back. I know that's a toughie. And I just wanted to begin the brain power that we need to have in order to carry this agenda. And I'm not talking about what's the first thing we want to tell the president or the vice president. That's not it, because they can't do it. We know that. We know they never will do it. We had a black
and president. Dr. Rogers. And you know something, Dr. Rogers? Uh-huh. We should have never got to this point where we had to depend upon who was going to be in office.
That's exactly that,
one of the questions that I had asked some time back was, at what point should we start to talk about a black independent party, political party, black independent political party? But now, what does it mean to be black? Because what's happening is black is becoming, I don't want to say infiltrated, but combined with black feminism, black gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, black conservative. You see what's happening now?
Right.
You're starting to hook every other political aspect to the concept of black, in so much so that we don't know who we are now.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We say it. It sounds good, right? It makes us feel good. But are you, black and conservative, mm-hmm. or black and Republican, or black and Democrat? So, we shouldn't have never gotten ourselves into this position in the first place.
I agree with you.
If we saw that our leaders, we did not have leaders, it was time to go at the grassroots level and start to form together so we could lift one of us out of our ranks. That's what I thought we should have been doing.
We definitely should have been doing that. Let me go over here to my brother, Jay. How you doing, brother Jay? I know you were on there. What is this madness, man? What is all this madness we into?
How you doing, Elder? Hey, listen. If we as a people have to subject ourselves to a new slave master with the assumption that the slave master's going to give us something, we as sick as we ever been. This white man done already told you. He's going to go back into the Paris Accord. Mm-hmm. He's going to do something else. He's going to stop the Muslim ban. Mm-hmm. And he's going to take care of DACA. So now, when you stop the Muslim ban and DACA, how does that help black people? How does that help those of us who are ascended from slavery?
Right.
I mean, at some point in time, we as a people have to become intelligent enough to understand who are our friends, who are our allies, and who are our enemies. And unfortunately, we have no friends, we have no allies, and we just have enemies.
Right.
So, if you expect anything from Biden and Kamala Harris, you're basically delusional, retarded, and quite obviously, you don't have no plan to demand anything from them, or are you in a position to demand anything from them? So let's just be clear about that. If you're not clear about that, then you're basically blowing smoke. Because how now at this time could we even think about asking something from someone who you've basically given what you could give to them, mm-hmm. without no guarantees in return for him to reward you for your service? And that's the reason why we as a people are in a position where every other culture and ethnic group in this country, other than the Native Americans, are overtaking us.
Right. That's exactly.
Understand that very clearly. Every other ethnic group in this country is overtaking us, the ones who built this mofo. And we have no rational idea on what our position is. and how to sustain it. Let me tell you something, Dr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. In the next 20 years, men like me and you, who great-great parents and ancestors were the ones who built this situation here, are going to be so marginalized that we're not even going to be remembered or represented at the level that we should be for what we've given to this country. And we think that we gonna get something from this white man, we sick. If anything, we should be trying to figure out how to get the hell out of here or go back to the level to where as we could build something and sustain ourselves without having to deal with them, because everybody is gonna dominate us.
Right. And you're exactly right. And there's some leeway to being able to get out of here. There are some things that can be done, but, you know, not a lot of people are working on it. You're right. We're trying to get what we can get from these folks. There's nothing available to us under this system. Nothing. Outside.
And you know what's so crazy, Dr. Rogers, is this. Let's look at it this way. The new darling of so-called black womanhood, Kamala Harris, she ain't black. I don't care what nobody say. She's not a descendant from the lineage that we come from of enslaved people who were captured here and made to build this bad boy. Now, watch what happens when it comes to where her mothers come from and the way that they are going to be allowed to come into this country and take away jobs from our people that's in the tech industry and the nursing industry and the medical industry, the engineering industry, and any industry that they are highly trained in, mm-hmm. okay?
And
they're going to work on the cheap. See, the thing that most people don't understand, an Indian will come here and work a job that pays $100,000 for $40,000 mm-hmm. and get away with it. And it'll make it hard for a person that's in a great amount of debt to be able to pay off their debt. But the funny thing is this, that we as a people don't realize and turn it around, we won't get our butts up and go to India and get the same education that they got getting on the cheap. You see how the cultural balance doesn't pan out and doesn't work?
That's right.
For our benefit? But it always works for somebody else's benefit. And here it is, we are in the same stagnant place. And if you ask these fundamental questions to the everyday black person, they couldn't give you no analysis on it. Mm-hmm. Or even have an understanding. Because they feel as though the daddy, Biden, and the mammy, Kamala, is going to save them from what? And here it is, we're in the streets right now. Our people going hungry, losing their housing, mm-hmm. losing their medical, just in a bad situation, man. Mm-hmm. And we talking about, oh, it's going to get better because now the summer cracker is out of office and we got a new cracker coming in that has a 40-year history of sticking it in our behind from the day he got in the office. Mm-hmm. So listen, let somebody else do their thing.
Yeah, and you're right. Thank you, Brother Jay. And you raised one very good point is that you're going to have anybody, community, group of people, those who are trying to escalate themselves and escalate their people in their community, it's got to be done now on a global basis. You're going to have to interact with the other world. You're not going to be able to Amazon is not a billionaire because they make money in America. They make money all over the world. And we're going to have to, as African people, even as we start our businesses, there are opportunities right now for us to work with Africa, trade with Africa, do some things. And that's where we've got to move. We got to move in that direction. And we don't need a president or a senator because they're not going to help in that way anyway. You're not able to access them at that level of power because you're not, what is it that you're bringing to the table for them? And if you don't bring anything to the table for them, they're not going to help you. So we need to help ourselves. we can do more by doing a communal thing with ourselves, like it used to be back during the days of, you know, when those black businesses were growing in what Dr. John Henry Cobb calls our golden age, that golden age, which was the 19th century, you know, where we began to see black banks being built by black men and corporations and companies being built by black men and women. Let me go over here, open up the lines and see if my listener here at Detroit, Michigan, 313-400. Listener, do you have a comment or are you just listening? 313-400, would you like to say something or are you just listening? Okay, just listening. Thank you so much for being on. Listening. Atlanta, Georgia, 404-453. Listening or you like to say something?
Taking up so long.
Hello?
Yeah, how you doing, my man? You hear me? You hear me, Doc?
Yeah, I can hear you. Oh, good. Hi, my brother. How you doing? I ain't talked to you in a while. How you been?
Hey, I'm good, man. When I called in, I've been trying to talk, man. But anyway,
how you see all this?
Time to be alive.
How do you see all this, man? It's,
man, like I say, man.
Yeah, you
can't. See, our people got to realize, man. The fundamental purpose of the president and the vice president is to keep this machine running in America, man. Mm-hmm. Once we realize that all politics is local, because you see, Gwinnett County, we went blue. You know that, right?
Right.
For the first time.
Another thing
is our people are stuck in the matrix. So what we do is. That line, no, it's not on my line, Doc.
Yeah, I hear something in the background. Your line too. Okay, yes. Go ahead, try it now.
But our people stuck in the matrix. All we do is vote, and then pray, and then when something happens, when somebody in the community, we just march, and then go to the streets and march, and then we go home and go to sleep. Okay, we got to get out of that matrix, man, where we stay in the mix. Because, you know, speaking of banks, I got an account with Citizens Trust Bank in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. They've been here over 100 years. You know that, right?
Right.
And then, you know, the rapper Killer Mike, Mike Rundle, he's starting like an online digital bank. You know that, right?
Who did?
The rapper Killer Mike, him with Andrew Young and another brother, they getting ready to start a bank called Greenwood.
All right.
It's gonna be like a digital bank.
Okay.
Gonna be like a digital bank. And you can for all the young people and older people too. So it's gonna be called Greenwood. So we coming out of this, man. I'm not gloom and doom, man.
Okay.
It took us a long time to get in this. And it's going to take all of us that want to get out, man.
Okay.
So I'm an optimist, man. I look at the glass half full instead of half empty. I look at the possibilities, man. Especially in 2020, with everything shut down. So life as we know it done changed anyway, man. So it's all possibilities, man, the way I look at it. Because I'm going to say once, I see my vision is with these airlines going out of business and nobody flying. This is a perfect opportunity for us to get us an airline, man. You know what I mean, bro?
That's what we need.
That's what I'm looking at, man.
That's what we need. We need to do like Marcus Garvey did. Need to get us a ship because you got to control the waterways. You know, we can trade back and forward with countries all over the world. How do we know that the Japanese or the Koreans might not trade with us? We don't know. You never tried it. They never come to the table with nothing. You know, we may be able to find several ways. The Indonesian may travel, trade with us. But you're going to have to take it globally. The thinking is going to be mm-hmm. expanded, and it's going to have to be expanded in a way, not only just communally, but we got to think of the whole world in doing so. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate your comments. Brother Timothy, you said you had something.
I appreciate you. Oh, one more thing, Doc. One more thing.
Go right ahead.
That night when you did that zoom in on Paul Robeson, that show you had with Paul Robeson in the beginning?
Right, yeah.
You know, Paul Robeson did a speech to the United Nations in 1941. You know that, right?
I know, right. Yep, I do.
Okay, because I was trying to find that speech or whatever. I know if I just ain't going in the right place, man. That's what I want to find the speech.
You just want to, I think it's in a, take a look at a book called Here I Stand.
Mm-hmm.
That's the book on the life of Paul Robeson. I think it might be in there. It's called Here I Stand.
Here I Stand. Okay, right. Doc. I appreciate it, man. Yeah, okay. Everything going to be good, man.
Good enough, man. Thank you, my brother. Thank you. Okay. Brother Marcus.
Thank you.
All right. Brother Marcus, we're going to get anything out of this new changes. We wanted Trump out. He's out. Now what?
Mm-hmm.
What now, brother?
We ain't going to get nothing. We ain't got nothing in 465 years. So why we think we're going to get something? You know, you just look. My analysis is this. They had to get Trump out of there because Trump was spooking a lot of black folks, and the black folks was looking to the motherland. See, so they said, look, what the hell you doing, Trump? Don't you know we get our resources from ripping off these Africans here? And in Africa, we get our resources from ripping them off. Mm-hmm. So now you're spooking them and they're looking to Africa. That's going to disrupt our show we got going on. Mm-hmm. See? So they had to get the powers that be that run the show, had to get him out of there. See? Because now they put Biden and Harris in there, you know, black people. They pacify us now. See, we are pacified now. Everybody, everything is all right now, you see? You know, and they put the black woman as this Indian woman in there, because she says she's Indian. To neutralize black people, black women, because it's black women, they say that put him over the hill, you know. These black women, they say turn out in droves. So this is all, it's all to pacify black people. Keep you looking here for your salvation. Keep you here, focus here. Don't look out of here. Don't, you know, just look here for your salvation. But as you said, brother, we have to link with the motherland. Yes, we have to join forces politically and economically with the motherland. Or else we finish.
Right.
You know, we finish. And what we want from the Democrats, and this is easy for all of us to speak with one voice. We say, look, wherever black people make up the mass majority of the population, we want to control the economics and body politics of that community.
Right.
That is something all of us, the church, everybody can get on that bandwagon. Say, look, wherever we control the politics, we could vote our people in because we have the numbers to vote who we want in the local election. But we say, look, you want to help us? We want economic control of our community. We don't want to be giving our money to no Arabs, to no Indians, to no Chinese, right, no more, right, that caught the money out of the community. You want to help us? Help us reestablish economic control of our community.
Right.
That's all I got to say.
And you know, Brother Marcus, that's exactly what a lot of our ancestors were trying to do back in those early years here. They were trying to build economic enterprises linked to Africa.
Yes, yes, yes. And we have actually regressed from that.
Yeah.
We have regressed from that. You see, the group economics, we are not focused on group economics. It's individual economics. It's individual black people getting wealth, which is easy for them to pick off. They can just pick off Oprah Winfrey, pick off Bill Cosby, because they're individuals.
Right.
See, so if it's not group economics, we're done for.
Exactly. Okay. Brother Marcus, I appreciate it always. I stick with us because I want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm talking. Hold on the line. Yes.
Yeah, definitely want to talk a little bit more. Brother Timothy, I'm going to come to you in just a minute. Let's take a little quick break. I got to pay some bills.
Yes, sir.
I'll come right back to you. I'll hear what you got to say, okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
We are back, my sisters and brothers, which is the Black Reality Think Tank, and I am your host for the evening, William Rogers. Let me just give you a brief lineup of the programs that are here. We are part of the TimeForAnAwakening.com radio network, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. And all of these networks are international in scope. We are broadcasting all over the world. On Monday, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we have African Perspectives. African Perspectives with the host, Brother Oshiemi Adelabu, African Perspectives. And then on Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., we have Acres of Diamonds. Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. Acres of Diamonds, 6 to 8 Eastern on Monday evenings. And then from 8 to 9 on Monday evenings, Eastern Time, we have Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. That's Black Therapy Central every Monday evening from 8 to 9. And then on the first and third Mondays of every month, we have a conversation with reparations being spearheaded by the Encobra Group And that program airs from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Tuesday, 8 to 10 Eastern, Black Reality Think Tank with yours truly. And then on Thursday, we have a new program that is coming forward very soon. I don't have the exact name, but it is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank network of programs. And I will be announcing the name of that very, very shortly. And then on Friday, from 8 to 10, we have Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. They are the developers of the Time for an Awakening network system. So their program airs from 8 to 10 every Friday evening, Eastern Time. And then on Saturday, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 Central, Black Sister Talk. And then from 6 p.m. Central to 9 to 8 p.m. Central, we have the Elders of Sankofa broadcasting out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the host of that program is Sister Dr. Janae James. She is the hosting that program, and that will be airing every Saturday evening from 7 to 9 Eastern Time. And then on Sunday, closing out the week from 7 to 9 Eastern, Time for an Awakening again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And this is our lined up of programs. All of our programs are archived. You can simply go to the archive at www.timeforanawakening.com. Go into the search portal and put in whichever one of the networks that you want to listen to, the Black Reality, Africa Perspective, Black Sister Talk, any of them, and you can listen to all of their programs that have been broadcast via this network. And so, again, we thank all of you, our listening audience, because we would not be anything without you, and we appreciate your support, and hopefully you will continue to do so. We are talking today about the elections and sort of a post-wrap-up analysis. But our focus is on what do black folk do? What are we going to do? We're not going to be able to rely upon Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, anybody, Barack Obama, none of that. What are we going to do? And how are we going to pull our community together? And we've had some very interesting conversations with our community. Brother Timothy, you have a thought that you wanted to share with us?
Yes, sir. I had a full week. I protested in the daytime and also the night. Mm-hmm. And I also was able to take away from my protests, get away from my protests, and go to that funeral of that guy who was killed at 61st and Locust. And in traveling there, sir, you see there's Asians in our community that have mom and pop stores, sell wigs, sell food, mechanics, they have barbershops. Traveling there, go to a sad moment, sad pact. Unfortunately, he got killed. Unfortunately, the cops are gunning down like that. Then after that, Dr. Rogers, I look at where are our businesses? You know, where's
That's
our
right.
barbershops?
Right.
Where's our mom and pop stores? And let me tell you about also, Dr. Rogers, we don't have any public schools in our community, Dr. Rogers. Now, I'm going to say this to you. I'm for public education, okay? And the charter schools that they put up, we used to play basketball in summer league. They don't even have basketball courts. I mean, I'm for, you know, some people who want alternative education because they feel as though the public school system let them down. But some of these people who get caught, charter schools look at it as a business. And what happens, they get a big budget and they shut them down and they go to jail. Now, Dr. Rogers, listen, ain't nobody going to come out of that race and help you. Mm-hmm. That was the greatest of the messenger. Marcus Garvey, you got to do for yourself. You got to put that business, that barbershop, that grocery store, that beauty parlor back in your own community. Dr. Rogers, we're at 402 murders in our black community. Now, I got a question, Dr. Rogers. Now, I've talked to my students. Somebody 19-year-old kills somebody and spends almost 20 years in jail. What's going on in your home that's happening? Mm-hmm. What you should be able to control is what's in your house. Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Rogers, I grew up with Gunsmoke and the Untouchables. And I'm not putting them down. That we never thought to take a gun and shoot somebody. And I'm not saying the forces above are not trying to create it. But Dr. Dodge, we got to do a better job of policing our own community and doing for ourselves.
Right. And see, that's
now, I mean, and I'm gonna say this to you. I'm gonna say, Dr. Rogers, and the black politicians who came out of those schools that are no longer there or helped gentrify their own community. Ain't nobody making them doing it. They want to be a part of the system that's wrong. Mm-hmm. You get in there and do something. If you want to be a teacher, you're going to teach. You know, you can have a school, high school full of teachers. You got some good, bad, and ugly. Mm-hmm. You got to go in there. You're able to teach your people and teach them. Or you go drink coffee and hang out all day and not do what they want in their classroom. You got to make a decision in your own community to save it and keep it. Ain't nobody gonna come out of their community and help you. How about that?
Right. You got to do it yourself. You're right. And see, that's
yes,
the thing.
Do.
We talk about the problems. We identify very clearly what, you know, the things that are going wrong in our community. But somebody has got to start something and do something. Somebody has to pick up. And there are some folks doing that. Now, let me just say this. And so a lot of our effort is to find who these folk are, join them, and find a way to support what they're doing and help them carry forward and expand to make. There are people who are in here trying to find a way to families to have a home, a decent home in a decent neighborhood, to try to provide some quality education. I'm talking quality education. There are folk out here trying to do that, but they need help. And see, our folk won't help them. We'll talk about them. You know, oh, they out here doing this, blah, blah, blah. You know, but see, nobody's doing anything. You got to do it. You got to join these folk to do that. I've got a brother.
Dr. Rogers, I'm a Pan-Africanist. And guess what? I want socialism amongst ourselves. Right. And I'm in the direction of that. But right now, you got to take care of your own community, maybe before you leave out of here.
Right.
You got to make that community in which you live be your base and travel back and forth to the continent.
Right.
But have a
right.
here also, or have a base over there, too.
Right.
Dr. Rogers?
Go ahead, Sister Young.
Okay, if you were going to say something, I can wait.
Well, no, that's all right. I was getting ready to call on another caller, but go ahead. I'll get you, and then I'll come back to you.
Okay. So we have these conversations all of the time.
All the time.
And,
all the time.
Yeah, and initially I was saying, oh, this is so redundant, but, you know, we need to be redundant until,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
more people yeah. get it. Because the fact is, those of us that are conscious, Pan-African, understand that the system is never going to work for us. We're smaller in numbers than the masses. The masses believe that Biden and Kamala or Barack Obama, whoever it is going to do something to correct the wrongs and the horrors that were done to us.
Right, right.
And what I'm a strong believer in is teaching our people what the system really, how the system really operates, and learning myself.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned, and I pass it on, because we're looking at these faces, a black face, a crazy orange face, and, you know, an old wrinkled face. And that's not to beat up on, you know, elderly, but I'll say that about white people. I won't say that about our elder, wonderful black folk, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can put any kind of face, an Indian face who's lying and saying that she's black. And it's not the face, it's the system. And that's what most of us are not paying attention to. We're paying attention to these externals,
mm-hmm.
you know? So when I looked at when they were trying to pass an anti-lynching law, I mentioned a little earlier, black people, the black caucus, everybody should have been on that
right.
if you believe in this system.
Right.
We should have been on that because George Floyd, you know, was a public lynching, and there are just thousands more. And one person was able to prevent that from becoming a law, an anti-lynching law.
That's right. That's exactly
and
right.
I can't remember his name, but his father's also in power with some cracker, you know. When Barack Obama was president, they wouldn't let him do jack. You know,
mm-hmm.
they tried to stop him. Mitch McConnell tried to stop him in every way that he could. And so in many ways, he was powerless. But how does the same system let a Trump get in office and
very
claim
good.
That he's the most powerful man and he can do any nasty thing to anybody that he wants to and get away with it?
Very good point. Very good point.
This is the system. And the last thing for now is that I'm pissed because black women are now being used and manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't choose Biden. Who chose Biden out of those of everybody else that was more qualified and had more cognitive abilities than him? Who chose him?
Mm-hmm.
Black women just got on board and got this guy elected, him and Kamala. Who chose Trump? When both of them were the worst of all candidates of the Republican and the Democratic Party, who chose the worst? We've got to think. Why didn't they not at least choose the more qualified? They chose the worst of each party. So we've got to ask questions. Why is this system operating like this? Why are they quietly building more, as I said earlier, private prisons and private juvenile centers?
That's right.
For black folk. We've got to ask these questions because we're being used, and black women are going to do all of this work like we do, work for Massa. Massa going to give us something. They're going to give us shit.
Right.
We're going to be disappointed again and go back and do the same thing over and over again.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you.
So they need to be, we need to wake our people up, Doc, real quick, because the things we're talking about doing to empower ourselves, it requires this thing called unity.
Okay.
And we don't have that anymore. Okay. We've got to reclaim that.
All right. I had asked a brother to join us. I've known him for some time. He's been very active in the Milwaukee community. He is a part of the pastoral community. He was recently at the helm of organizing Souls to the Polls, providing opportunities for African Americans to get to the polls to vote in not only just this national election, but some of the ones prior to this. And he's very strong active. One of his goals is to pull together Pastors United to get the black church up and moving again. That is a must. That is a must to get there. That was historically this one of the strongest institutions for us coming out of chattel slavery, was the black church. So I asked him to join us to kind of give us his thoughts in terms of what the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff, because we have to look behind the scenes sometimes how things work. So I appreciate him coming on. Reverend Lewis, how you doing?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. How are you?
Doing great. I'm so glad you're here to join us. Well, how do you, you did the Soul to the Polls. They turned out for you. Now we got these two different people in the White House, got Trump out. So what can we expect?
Well, you know, when we did Soul to the Polls, the community wasn't crazy about our candidates, Dr. Rogers. So, you know, I kind of turned things to doing something I always wanted to do,
uh-huh.
and that's build power and community by, you know, creating what we're calling a voting block. So we want to take all the folks who gathered with us to get out to vote with Souls to the Polls, and we want to try to keep them together to build up a voting block in our community and be intentional about it and having an agenda, you know, talking about our family structure, our health and wellness, our economic development, crime and incarceration,
right.
the education, and of course, civic engagement. So, you know, that's what I think needs to happen next. We need to stay together because our slogan was, you know, we were the army of faith, the power of 100,000 souls to the polls. And I just think if we keep 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people together as a block, we could really have lots of leverage in our local politics and start to build from there, making sure that we put people in place who are going to look out for our interests. And that's where I think we need to go right now after all the marching, after all the protesting. You know, the young people went out and they stood up for us. I think now we need to strategize on how we use that leverage to make change in our community. And I just thought having a block of people voting together would be very, very powerful. And I heard earlier, you know, someone saying that unity is the key. And you just go along with what people who are going to go along to start with. And when they start seeing success, then other people will come along. But I don't think we just sit around and just talk about what we want to do. We need to be doing it, and that's what I try to do, Dr. Rogers. We started, and you helped me start Pastors United.
Sure
you know,
did,
when
yeah.
when you were with me at MATC, and man, we had 300 preachers in that building that day, and that's when we started our Pastors United.
I remember
so
that.
We had, yeah, man, that was it was a fabulous, fabulous meeting. And now we have over 400 faith leaders in our organization, and we work with over 516 in our Souls to the Polls, and there's others that need to come along. But now we are, after this work, the real work starts. Getting out to vote was one thing, but now we want to build this block, you know. So, you know, people can go to www.buildingablock.com and find out how we are trying to manage to pull together folks to have leverage for our local politics for sure. And that, of course, that would affect our state and federal politics like it has here. You know, I don't think if we had not come out in this voting season, there wouldn't be a president-elect Biden right now. Mm-hmm. And we need to continue to build on that so that we can have that kind of control in future endeavors in our in our communities, you know, not just presidential races,
right.
but certainly control our local politics, Dr. Rogers.
I like that. I like that. Let me ask you, you know, you are representing a very large body of black churches. Are they responding to your message of what you're trying to say? I know you and I talked about this a little bit. Are they open in large numbers to some of these changes that you would like to pull forward?
Man, these people, they're ready. Man, they really are, Doctor. Okay. And, you know, before, you know, we started this 10 years ago when we first had our meeting at MATC.
Right.
And, of course, that kind of conversation was a little bit strong back then. But now, with all the things that are happening right now, Doctor, you know, these people are ready because they know that we are the only ones who can help the change. Nobody else is going to ride in on some white horse and save us.
No,
we have to save ourselves.
Right.
So now I think they are ready. They're tired of the rhetoric, the riffraff that have been representing us. And we want somebody potently representing the needs of our communities and making sure that they look out for our interests. And I think the people are ready. Nobody wants to jump out there and do this stuff alone because you always get your head chopped off. But all of us working together, you know, it's a better opportunity for people to understand that we're in this together and we'll, you know, we'll live and die together.
Right.
And you know, and I just believe if you haven't found anything that you'll die for, man, you haven't really lived. You know, I almost died of COVID-19 too, Dr. Rogers, I was on my deathbed.
I heard that.
And you know what? I wasn't afraid at all, you know, because I knew, you know, I was with the Lord. But I will tell you this. When I started to get well, I was scared to death because I knew I had to get back in the fight, and I didn't know if my body was going to recover, man. But now I'm recovering, except for my respiratory system is not what it used to be.
Right.
That COVID-19 is real, everybody. Yeah. Man, it'll blast you off. It'll take you out. It'll debilitate your body. It will change your whole life if you get it, and you get it like I got it. But I tell you one thing, now I'm even more determined to change our society because I understand that living is very, very difficult for us, man.
Yes, it
was, man, I was worried when I was dying, Dr. Rogers. I was kind of relieved. Mm-hmm. But when I knew I was going to live, man, I was scared to death because I knew we had so much fight to give,
man,
if we wanted to change this society.
Well, listen, Pastor Lewis, I am definitely dedicated to helping you. In any way, this is a platform that I've embraced because of some of the changes, you know, with the COVID, so you can't get out anymore like we used to. And I'm definitely willing to open this up to you at any point in time you need to come on. We can talk about anything you want to talk about as it relates to the salvation of our people. So just let me know. Keep in touch. You got my number now, and I got yours. I'm going to make sure that we do that because I think, you know, I haven't seen I've been in Milwaukee 35 years. I haven't seen the energy that you bring to this the black church community. And I know that
bless
that is key. I know that that is a key for some change, you know.
Bless you, man. Bless you, Dr. Rogers.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you again for helping me even get to begin to start something like this.
I
you know
what she was doing.
I mean, man, it was.
We were over there. We sat at George Webb. Had us some bacon. Had us some eggs. Hash browns. And we talked about it.
Hey, man, don't tell everybody we was eating bacon, man. They're gonna be mad because we had some pork.
Definitely
so.
You're right, though.
Yeah, man. That man, and I so much admire your work, man, and I really appreciate your invitation, because I'm gonna certainly need you, doctor, because it's got to be all hands on deck, man. We got to build something that's powerful, and we got to do this together, man. It cannot be separated. We got to do it together.
I agree. Thank you so much, brother. Stay around with us a little while. We got about 20 more minutes.
Oh no.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I'm going to listen. I'm going to mute and just listen, sir. Thank you for the opportunity.
Right. I think I got another brother on here that's getting ready to do some real work as well. I think this might be him. I'm going to check 336-392. 336-392. Listening? Oh, that's just a listener. I was thinking it was another brother that thought was going to be doing some things with us, and I'm looking forward to him. Sister Yan, I want to come back to you just a minute. I know you all are getting ready to pull together that new program that I keep talking about. Do you have a name for it yet?
Tentatively.
Okay.
Tentatively.
Okay.
I don't want to say until we.
Okay. All right. No, I won't. Yeah. I won't push it. Okay. And I kind of thought that was Brother Lance on now with the Greensboro number, but it wasn't.
That was actually a brother that I invited on to listen. So I think he just decided to listen.
All right. Good. Okay. Yeah, good. So,
and by the way, Doc, that 313 is another brother that I invited on. I don't know if he's still on, but.
What's the number?
The 313, the Detroit number?
Oh, yeah, he was on. He was on for a while. He stayed on for a while. He's off now. I did ask him, did he want to speak? Yeah, he did leave. Yeah, he left. Okay. All right, thank you. Let me go back up here to Brother Lush, because I know you said you were that question kind of, has a way of numbing you sometimes, because it numbs me, too, when I think about it. And so I was just wanted to see if you had giving a little bit more energy to that, to thinking about how to do this. You know, I like what definitely Reverend Lewis just mentioned about what he's doing with the organization called Pastors United. But what any thoughts that you now have been able to share with us?
Well, I was listening in on the several other comments, and Dr. Rogers, within the community that I'm in, I often wonder about the kind and type of direction that we want to go in. That's why I'm adamant about our own front door, so to speak. And so we're not, in my opinion, as structured, because maybe someone doesn't go to the same church or is not of the same fraternity or sorority. So everyone has really kind of cordoned themselves off with this imaginary boundary around where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to gauge that, right? It's sort of like the modus operandi, so to speak, is what's in it for me. Right. And so if it doesn't, if I can't get anything out of it, then, happy trails. I'm going about my business. So, it's really hard to gauge. I'm just going to try to do my part, listen in, learn more, see how I can be of service more so than anything else.
Right.
Exactly. Without hurt, harm, or danger to my own household.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are ways that I could be of service, I would be, happy in doing that. But, it's really tough.
Right, exactly. On our Saturday program that we do, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank Network family, there's going to be a conversation coming up, I think it's around the 1st of December, I believe, on policing. and the conversation will be held with a group of African-American police officers, former police officers, and who have an association, and we could talk a little bit about how can we begin to look at things like patrolling our streets and what is the reality of that. Because, like I said, we still got a lot of people killing each other, our own people.
Right.
A lot of that. Right. And we got to address that. You got to address that. I mean, here in Milwaukee, I mean, I think Brother Timothy said the numbers have gone up for Philadelphia, New York. I mean, Milwaukee has exceeded all records already, and it's not even the end of the year yet. This is the highest number of homicides that has happened in a very long time. Brother Lewis, do you know how many, when is the last time the numbers were like this, or is this the first time the numbers have been this high?
This is a record high, doctor.
Record high. Okay.
I know it's almost 150-200% increase in killings from last year. So,
okay, right.
You know, it's really, you know, it's getting really high and out of hand.
Yeah, and I've heard Sister Yan talk about this several times. We got to stop that. And how do you do that? Because a lot of that's personal. This is personal stuff. This is behavior. This is mentality. This is hanging on to the old slave mentality process. And but yet it affects all of us. It you know, you just can't say, well, that's that family over there. That's them doing that. Now, that's everybody's going to be affected by that. Down the street. And you're starting to see crimes here where we are. Things like house invasions. And you didn't see that too much. But when you start seeing these home invasions and all that kind of stuff, how do we address that? You know, and obviously one thing that I guess in terms of the national political scene is look at the appointments that the president gives to those individuals who then have local impact from, you know, Department of Justice and all of that, and looking at some of how all of that works, and Department of Health and Human Services, funding at the local, from the national level to the local level, how is that going to work, and who's going to be in charge of that? Those kinds of things. And I'm looking at some of Biden's potential people that he's looking at, particularly those that are African American. And I know for the Justice Department, he's looking at Stacey Abrams of Georgia. He's also looking at Cory Booker. Out of New Jersey, who's also been a member of the Senate Judiciary for a while. So he's looking at those two. He's looking at Susan Rice, Secretary of State. Don't quite know how much that'll do, but he is looking at her. He's looking at, in terms of the Defense Department, he's looking at Jay Johnson, the black lawyer who was Secretary of Homeland Security under Obama. He's looking at bringing him on board, possibly. And these are just particulars that that is doing. And then Treasurer, he's looking at Roger Ferguson, who is the black chief executive of the Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association of America. He's looking on bringing him as Secretary of Treasury, as well as Elizabeth Warren. Education, Hispanic, Lily Garcia. He's looking at her. So those are some things that I think could have some weight, because they impact the local level and state level, and they can obviously, and sometimes they are.
Well, Doc Rogers.
Go right ahead.
I have a question. Is it incumbent upon us at the grassroots level to reach out across the table towards those guys that you mentioned, or should we just wait until these appointments have been made and see what it is that they do? You know, I just kind of wonder about that. What is it that we need to do at the very, very foundational level to be able to link up with some of those people, because you've mentioned those names. And honestly, yes, I've heard them, but they don't know me.
right? Exactly. Yeah.
They don't know me. And no one's asked, no one's made a phone call to me. Right. No one's included me in their survey. So what is it? Do I need to go to them? Should they be coming to us? How is that dynamic at this point in time where we are?
Can I speak on that?
Yeah, I'm going to answer him and then I'll come to you. I think definitely we need to do our homework and find out where they stand on certain critical issues. And I'll just give you a case in point because I worked in an organization that was involved in this. For instance, the Department of Health and Human Services has a tremendous budget that they're supposed to be doing grassroots community kinds of things with stuff like drug addiction, AIDS, homicides, you know. So I would want to see that first we need to look at some of these appointees in particular and see where they stand, for instance, on looking at, for instance, the whole idea around homicide and being a mental health issue and those areas, looking at how they see that, because that's going to make the difference, because that's where the funds are going to go. And those funds then can be used sometimes by grassroots organizations to build some coalitions. So that's the way I would see it, Brother Lush, is that it may, just because it's a black face, doesn't mean that they're going to make sure that, you know,
exactly.
The community.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I don't know how much Cory Booker would, you know, I don't know that much about the brother, so I don't want to talk about him. But I don't know. I'm not sure. Sister Yan?
Yes. So they've been spending the last 40 years, whatever, busting up the black community. And when I talked about genocide initially and mass incarceration and these new juvenile detention centers, again, we're not addressing that. We're not addressing the root of the problem. I'm hearing black folk just across the nation talk about these issues of us killing each other, you know, over and over again, but we're not addressing the root. Number one is when you take the father out of the community, you take the males out. Young men don't have the guidance and the love and, you know, the manhood training, all the things that a young boy needs, they lose that.
Right.
And so where do they go? Because it's normal and natural for a young man to, a young boy to want to learn how to grow into a man. They go to gangs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the gangs, they're full of everybody like them. No, you know, no fathers, because the fathers were taken out of the family. Our black men didn't just disappear and abandon our families. Mm-hmm. This was all very deliberate. And so for us to think that, you know, the same system that took our men out of our communities and are still taking our men out, you know, again, with public lynchings, to think that putting a black face or any face in politics, even local politics, is going to change what they did on purpose is ridiculous.
I agree.
That's not going to happen. So it does come down to us. And I will repeat something that Bruce Bridges said, that we need to quarantine ourselves as a black community and heal our minds. Mm-hmm. These young people that mm-hmm. are killing each other, I've worked with them for years. They are filled with self-hatred. Many hate their parents on a level that has never existed in the black community.
That's true.
You know, so we've been damaged. We've been damaged to the point where we're just taking each other out. And that damage has to be addressed. And no one is going to do that politically.
Right.
We have to do that.
Right. Let me ask Brother Jay, you know, in New York City, you know, New York is, as in the past, has always had challenges with, you know, our communities and brothers dealing with each other and gangs and so forth. Brother Jay, how do you see addressing that? I don't, because we all agree the politician can't do it. The police definitely can't do it. Can we as a community, as people, do it? And if so, what do we do from your perspective? Brother Jay, you there? Okay, I thought Brother Jay was in there. Okay. Well, that is a question. I'm just going to open up the lines for all of us
that are here. Can I
speak?
Yeah,
please.
Dr. Rogers, can I talk? Dr. Rogers?
Brother Marcus just asked first, and then I'll come to you. Brother Marcus?
Okay. No problem.
Yes, brother. One solution we can implement immediately to address the economic situation is an economic boycott in the black community.
That's right.
The nationalists had a boycott. They had a program, a Buy Black campaign. It's 30 to 60 day movement. So for 30 to 60 days, do not shop in these non-black stores in our community. Go out of the community. Go shop in the white folks' community for 30 to 60 days. You'll get better products at cheaper prices. What will that do? Those people in our community can't make the payroll. They can't pay the rent. They can't pay the workers. They're going to have to pack up and leave. Right. See what I'm saying? And then we can fill that void. Because without economics, ain't no, you said you talk about politics, because the economics is it is how you spend the money. That's the, you know, that's the whole thing about economics. That's where the politics come in. You that's implement right. policy right. how to spend the money.
That's right.
Next thing is the we address the education. We know that we have an uninspiring curriculum in these schools. Okay, these schools glorify white folks. Glorify white people. So our kids come out glorifying white people and destroying ourselves. So the Saturday schools that you talk about is something that we can implement and must implement. You know, but we're going to win this war. You know, in spite of how it looks, we're going to win. I'm telling you. It's going to get thick for a while, but we're going to pull through.
Right.
That's all I got to say, brother.
And that's good. And you know, that's exactly right. And that's it. We're talking about ground zero. How do you deal with ground zero? That's where you got to deal with. You got young brothers sitting on the porch. They don't have jobs. They're sitting out, hanging out, smoking weed, trying to sell that, whistling at the girls. You know, and I mean, how do you deal with that? And so obviously economics, Malcolm said politics without economics is like a symbol without substance. And that is so true. That is so true. Brother Timothy?
Yes, sir. We've had a perfect example. We need it again, and we need to have it with an agenda, an international program with Pan-Africanism and nationalism in our community to connect it. We need another million man march and another woman's man march and a woman's march. Mm-hmm. Now, putting that together is not easy. We've had them many times, but we need them again, and we need them more than ever. And I, you know, and like you said, it you know, serious about it with the serious people with a serious program and putting it to effect. Mm-hmm. Now, how it's going to happen, I can't tell you. And when it's going to happen, I don't know. But we need it. The Million Man March, that Million Man March and that Woman's March was an example of some of the answers. And leave it at that.
Okay. Is the nation planning some things like that? Are they doing that? Planning?
Dr. Robbie, somebody needs to get somebody else's ear for it to happen. And I can always talk. We can always talk. And maybe we can get in the right ears of people. But we need something on that level. And all of Garvey and all of Booker T. Washington, you know, and all of Malcolm and all of Du Bois, all of that. We need all those people that on the shoulders that we have stood on to make us. We got this far.
Okay.
Adam Clayton Powell, all of it. King, all that we need it now, right. More than ever.
I got you. I agree. Well, brothers and sisters, we've come to that time. I really appreciate all your comments and your discussions. And those of you who were here just listening, I appreciate that as well. We've got a lot of work to do. Don't think because you've gotten a changeover in that building over there on Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C., that things are going to change, because they're not. You know, the Senate is still worse, going to be as worse as it's always been. The House is not going to do anything. so your local politicians are only dancing to what Washington does. So you're not going to get the changes until you do it. We got to do that, you know. And until we do that, you're not going to get anything, as so many of you said. And if there are folk out here who are doing it, we need to help them. We need to join them. Greg Lewis, Brother Lewis, give him that website one more time that you passed out. You know, and here's living proof of that you can pull coalitions together. Can you give us that website?
Yes, it's www.buildingablock.com.
Okay.
www.buildingablock.com.
And that's what we need to do. We need to build a block.com. Very good. Good night, my brothers and sisters. Have a wonderful week. I look forward to seeing you next week. We'll be here. Man, thank you so much.
Somebody should have told me it would be like this, be like this, be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this, yeah. Life is a balance. You lose your grip, you can slip into an abyss. No doubt, you see these niggas tripping. Ego in charge of every move, he's a star. And we can't look away due to the days that he caught our hearts. He's falling apart, but we deny it. Justifying a half-assed shit he dropped, we always buy it. When he tell us he a genius, but it's clearer lately. It's been hard for him to look into the mirror lately. There was a time when this nigga was my hero, maybe. That's the reason why his fall from grace is hard to take. Cause I believed him when he said his shit was pure, ain't he? The type of nigga swear he real, but all around us fake. The women, the dick riders, you know the yes men. Nobody with the balls to say something to contest them. So he grows out of control. Until the person that he truly was all along is starting to show. Damn, wonder what happened. Maybe it's my fault for idolizing niggas based off the words they be rapping. When come to find out, these niggas don't even write they shit. Hit some new style bubbling up, then they bite this shit. Damn, that's what I get for lying to myself. Well, fuck it. What's more important is he's crying out for help. While the world's egging him on, I'm begging him to stop it. Playing his old shit, knowing he won't top it. False prophets. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. Be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. False prophets. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. Be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Yeah, false. I got a homie, he a rapper and he wanna win bad. He want the fame, the acclaim, the respect that's been had by all the legends. So every time I see him, he's stressing. Talking about niggas, don't fuck with him. This shit is depressing. And I know he's so bitter, he can't see his own blessings. Goddamn, nigga. You too blind to see you got fans, nigga. And a platform to make a classic rap song to change a nigga's life. But you too anxious living life. Always worry about the critics who ain't never fucking did it. I write what's in my heart, don't give a fuck who fucking with it. But in a sense, I can relate. The need to be great turns into an obsession and keeps a nigga up late writing words. Hoping people observe the dedication that stirs in you constantly. But intentions get blurred. Do I do it for the love of the music or is there more to me? Do I want these niggas to worship me? False prophets. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. Be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. False prophets. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. Be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Yeah, false prophets. These rappers insecure. They talk about being a man so much I finally understand that they ain't even sure about who they are and why they do this. Guess I'm included in that category as a nigga who done had the glory. My highest moments come from telling all the saddest stories I've seen in my life. I be fiending the right songs that raise a hair on my arms. My lowest moments came from trying too hard to impress some niggas that couldn't care if I'm on. Therefore, from here on out, my hair grow out. I care nothing about opinions. I wanna give hope like the fountains you throw pennies in. Hit the store, take your disc, make your wish. This is dedicated to the ones that listen to me on some faithful shit. I'm on some thankful shit. But the real God is in you, not the music you copping. I hear my old shit and know I can top it. False prophets. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. Be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. False prophets. Somebody should have told me it would be like this. Be like this. Be like this. Somebody should have told me it would be like this.
Be like this.
He said it. You heard him, my man.